Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of the Purple Knights podcast. Of course, last episode we had the great party facilitator and DJ, Mr. Alfonso Starr, on the show. And on that episode, we name dropped a lot of very cool, very special people. And one of them joins me here tonight. I'm talking about Mr. Martin Kember. How you doing, Martin?
Man, I am well, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so honored to have you here and be able to talk to you about music and about Prince specifically. And you're one of the best falsetto singers I've had the pleasure of hearing live.
Thank you, sir.
So, yeah, I just wanted to say that you're enormously talented. My sister Paula, who actually got me into Prince, follows you very, very faithfully on Facebook and comments and likes a lot of your posts and videos and things like that. So she thinks the world of you, and I do as well.
I appreciate that.
So,
hey, Paula. Doing. Thank you, yeah. Paula.
Yeah, shout out to Paula. Well, where should we get started? I mean, how did you get into music? How did you get into singing? What really inspired you, and how did that all come together in your life?
Well, I have to say that my mother was an opera singer, and we grew up around music, and I was just one of those kids that loved radio in particular. So I would listen to radio, you know, constantly. I'd go to school, come home, first thing I'd do is play my records or turn on the radio to see if I could hear something new that would, you know, excite me. So, you know, I would always sing along, you know, I'd learn the songs and sing along. And, you know, it wasn't too long as a little kid before my mom realized that, hey, I could actually carry a tune. And she, you know, taught me a lot of things like, you know, pitch and breath control in the early days. And I still sometimes when I'm performing, you know, as a little kid, my mom would invite her friends over and have me sing. And I'd see her in the back of the room, you know, like conducting me and mouthing the lyrics and, you know, just cheering me on and giving me that confidence. And so shout out to my mom. She was really the one that, you know, gave me the confidence to do it. And, you know, I luckily inherited some of her skill, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a little bit of genetics involved there. That's very cool. So yes, yeah, sir. Yeah, it's great to have family around you as a support system to sort of lift you up and guide you and inspire you in that way. So I deeply resonate with that aspect of your story. And so when did you have an idea that singing was something that you wanted to do professionally?
Well, by the time I was 10, my sisters had joined in, and we would sing in the kind of three-part harmony. And before too long, we used to do some shows, and we got a job on a small, almost like a paddle steamer when we lived back east in the Midwest. We were the entertainment. So the band would come out, and then we would come out and sing with the band. And I was only, you know, probably 10, maybe as old as 12. And, you know, I just loved performing and always loved singing. And, like I said, I was one of those kids that could not turn off the radio. And I used to go and mow lawns, you know, and wash neighbors' cars so I could go buy, you know, the latest album that I wanted, you know, so it was just my passion. And then, you know, but it always kind of seemed like, honestly, like that elusive dream that, oh, that really doesn't happen to people, like, you know, success, that's only for stars. You know, I'm not a star. I'm just a guy who loves music, right? And during high school, I kind of got away from it a little bit. But let me just back up, though, because when I was in junior high school, I used to DJ a club. So I was only like 15. The club was 16 and up, right? And so I used to DJ a club called the Ozone in Northridge, California on Friday nights. And I wasn't even old enough to get in, but, you know, but then, you know, back in my time, man, we'd play all the fun dance music. But then when it got time, you know, to maybe get a little closer to that girl you'd been dancing with, we'd break it down and play the slow jams. And that's when I'd grab the mic and, you know, sing songs like Reasons by Earth, Wind & Fire and things like that to Isley Brothers. And, you know, we'd have a great time. And then, you know, during high school, I got away from it a little bit. And I was so focused on DJing because it was still like, oh, okay, I can do this and use music to entertain people and get paid for it. And so I got away from performing a little bit, but then the bug kind of hit me again. And before too long, I with two of my best friends, from high school, Sean Harris and Jeff Gill, we formed a group called As One. And I cut some demos and, you know, would work all week and record on the weekends, you know, to with whatever money I could save up to buy studio time. And we cut a demo. And before too long, we got a record deal. A gentleman by the name of L.A. Dre from the NWA camp became a member of our group and a keyboard player of our band. And we were offered a record deal. And we did our first album called As One, AZ1. And we, not too long after that, were traveling, promoting our album. We had our first single broke top 40, a song called Trust in Me. And it was kind of, you know, during the height of the New Jack era. And, you know, it was just a dream come true because now, you know, I'm with my best friends and we're traveling on this promotional tour, having the time of our lives and going around to New York and, you know, the East Coast and the West Coast and just singing our songs and playing our music and, you know, having a lot of fun, I must say, maybe a little too fun, too much fun. But yeah, time of my life, man. And that's how it really got started for me. And, you know, then after that, after the group kind of, we had our good success with our first album. Jeff Gill was in radio. He was a DJ and was offered the program director position at Stevie Wonder's radio station, KJLH in Los Angeles. And so he kind of segued a little bit more away from the band. And then I started not long after that recording some music and writing some music for a solo project. Before too long, I was able to get a publishing deal as a songwriter. And then the publisher submitted some of those songs to Warner Brothers. And I ended up signing a deal with Warner Brothers as a solo artist. And that's where my One Shade of Love album came from. And, you know, that was another just a fantastic time. Now we're doing it, you know, with a big budget and in the big studios in LA and, you know, hiring some of the greats to come and play on the album. And, you know, it's just always just been a passion of mine to create music and to sing and to play and perform.
So how did things sort of progress then after your first solo record?
After my first solo record, again, that was on Warner Brothers. So, you know, that was the dream label for me, you know, being a Prince fan. And it was kind of a concept record in a way. It was very romantic, very mid-tempo and ballad heavy, you know, because, you know, for the most part, I excel at writing love songs, you know, especially melody driven love songs, you know. But there's another side to me that likes to get funky too, but that was not part of the direction for that album. But, you know, for me, it was a fantastic experience, but it was also a heartbreak because, like so many artists who have these stories, literally right before my album was about to be released, the senior VP of A&R who had signed me, and he was coming off a platinum Grammy winning album with his debut artist named Paula Cole, which many people may remember. All of a sudden, he was gone from the label. There was kind of a power struggle, and he ended up on the wrong side of it. So there I was at the label without anybody to champion my project. And they dribbled it out with literally no promotion at whatsoever. I mean, they just I had a guaranteed release contract, a clause in my contract. And they kind of dribbled out, you know, a few thousand copies, but put no money behind it because, you know, it's very political at the labels at that time. My guy was gone. So nobody else is going to step in and pick up his project and, you know, spend their budgets on it. They've got their own artists. So I kind of was abandoned at the label. And songs on that album, well, first of all, that album itself, just from being associated with Warner Brothers and being distributed worldwide, it kind of found its own cult following. It developed its own kind of organic core audience. One of the songs kind of started to get played on radio a little bit without any promotion. And so it kind of created a core audience for me. And then once I was negotiated my release from that label, a lot of the songs on there, I ended up shopping and placing with other artists. Like Kenny Lattimore recorded my song, Who, from that album. That was on his album called Weekend, and that did well for him. And then my first gold album gold song that I wrote was a song called When Your Spirit Gets Weak, which was also on my One Shade of Love album, but it was recorded by a group, a Christian boy band called Plus One, and they went gold with it. They had the label behind them. They had the budgets, you know, and they went gold with it. So that was my first gold success as a songwriter anyway. And then alongside of that, I was also writing and recording and producing. And not too long after that, I recorded an album called Cycles, which I said, this time I don't need a label, right? I've got my fans. I'm just going to serve my fans with some new music. And I recorded this album called Cycles with a great friend of mine, and I was living in Chicago at the time, Emil Gantos. Emil is a fantastic writer and producer. He's written the last huge hits for Charlie Wilson. Shout out to Emil. And Eric, the Insomniacs, we wrote a bunch of stuff together. And also a good friend of mine who I call my cousin. He's not really my blood cousin, but I call him my cousin, Reese Nicholas out of the UK, who's a very successful writer producer. We met on MySpace and started writing music over, sharing music and writing stuff on MySpace. So he contributed to that album quite a bit too. Then came this call. Let me just back up a little bit. I was always really close with the guys from All for One, you know, the group All for One.
Yep.
I swear by the moon and the stars and the sky. Grammy award winning. So I was a writing partner with Jamie Jones from All for One for a long time also. We wrote a lot of great stuff. He and I and Jason Pennock. All for One actually went out on a tour with Color Me Bad. I guess there was a lot of problems on the tour from what I heard, because one of the members, I'll keep names out of my mouth. but one of the members had, some problems with substance abuse and addiction, where he was not able to fulfill what they had started and what they built. And they were on tour with Jamie Jones at the time. And I got a call from Jamie Jones and All for One, I should say. And I got a call from Jamie, said, "Hey, man, Color Me Bad's looking for a singer. They're looking for somebody to join the band. You know, would you be interested?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "We've got this big tour planned. We've got, you know, all of this stuff happening." And, you know, so, and they had heard my Cycles album. The other members of Color Me Bad had heard my Cycles album, particularly Kevin KT Thornton. Great guy, man. Fantastic. Good friend of mine. Great talent. Fantastic talent. And particularly, you know, Kevin thought that I'd be a great fit with the band. And they flew out to Chicago. They came to my studio in Chicago kind of to audition me. And, you know, I'm a music lover. I'm a music fan first. So I did my homework. I'd looked at all of their performances where they maybe performed at the halftime show at a basketball game and the things that they sung a cappella. And when they came, you know, to hear me sing, I was ready. And instantly, you know, I knew where to be harmony wise. And we just clicked. And, you know, it was just, you know, those a magic kind of thing. And before too long, believe it or not, the first performance I did with them, it was at in Atlantic City at what used to be, I think it was the Trump Casino or the Trump Hotel and Casino at the time. he was just a celebrity at that point, not a future and ex-president and what have you. In front of 5,000 people. And, you know, that there was a 5,000 capacity. It was sold out. And that was my first performance with Color Me Bad. And it just felt great. And people really didn't seem to know or care that I was not the original singer. They just loved the songs and my ability to perform those songs and to sing those songs. You know, I think, you know, take me through. And then we did a great tour. I got to tour the world singing, you know, those songs. And when I was on tour with Color Me Bad, knowing my passion for Prince, you know, when it came time, they'd let me do a solo number and I'd always do a Prince song. I could have done one of my songs, but I'd always do a Prince song. So I'd do like Do Me Baby or How Come You Don't Call Me or something like that while we were on tour all over the world, man. Malaysia, Indonesia, East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, you name it. And I just had a great time and it was a wonderful experience. And then do the fast forward to 2014, we did the BET Awards and did a throwback section. It was Color Me Bad, Silk, and Troop as a throwback section in 2014. So that was a great time. So shout out to Kevin for you know, his friendship and for his talent and for you know, really being the one who reached out and gave me the opportunity to be a part of Color Me Bad.
So we're coming up on the anniversary of Prince's passing, April 21st. And, yes. You know, it's always a kind of a bittersweet time, you know, because being such a huge Prince fan, when he was suddenly no longer of this earth, it was a shock to all of us. So that first year in particular, that first anniversary, April 21st, I was in Minneapolis there at First Avenue and the Revolution, and a lot of the people from all the different aspects of Prince's career had that reunion. It was an emotional night. Yep. But, you know, I always think about the interview that he had with Mel B, and she asked him about birthdays, and you know, his response was largely, "No, I don't really celebrate birthdays, but you know, the day when I ascend, then that might be a time to celebrate. So, you know, now it's a weird thing because I don't want to confuse celebrating with his departure from this state of life anyway, this
right
state of life. But at the same time, we love to pay tribute to him and his music and his legacy on that day. And I don't think that, you know, I feel in my heart of hearts, just based on things that I've heard him say, that he would frown upon that based on his beliefs and, you know, where he is now. We're still here and we still love him and we still love his music. And, you know, he brought so many of us together. So we will be celebrating his life, his legacy, and his music here in Los Angeles at a club called the Venice West in Venice, California, on the anniversary of his passing, April 21st. And Alfonso Starr will be there. And I will have my band, The Unit, there that night, which everybody knows how much I love that band. Stacey Lamont, mm-hmm. Sidney Drums, who is the drummer for the Jacksons and Layla Hathaway and so many more. Yeah, he's woo. And then Kyle Bolden will be on guitar that night. He also plays guitar with Stevie Wonder and the Jacksons and many others. He just came back from a tour with Corrine Bailey Ray. He's just ridiculously talented. We'll have Rommel on bass that night. Rommel is a fantastic bass player and guitar player. And I just have to say that the last time I played at the Venice West, we had my great friend and a fantastic bass player, John Stewart. And that was last September. And John has also passed away in a very unexpected car crash towards the end of last year. So this will be the first time we're playing without John. I know Rommel will come in and, you know, do a fantastic job because he's so talented, but I'm also dedicating this night to John Stewart, our bass player. We'll also have the great Myron McKinley on keys. Now, if you don't know Myron McKinley, please Google him. He is Earth, Wind & Fire's music director, and he is a keyboard player that like few that you've ever heard. And he'll be playing Rhodes and electric piano that night. We'll have Paul on synthesizer and my boy Reggie on saxophone and some beautiful background vocalists who will not only sing background, but sing some leads too. And of course, Alfonso Starr, you know, getting the party started. So if you're in the Los Angeles area, definitely come out to the Venice West on April the 21st. And, you know, we're going to celebrate Prince that night and have a great time and just enjoy his music together as a Purple family.
For anybody in the area, you know, you gotta check these guys out. They're incredible. They're a force to be reckoned with. So,
and, you saw the unit at the poorhouse, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes. And respect and love and peace to John Stewart.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes.
We miss John.
It's always unfortunate, you know. I've been talking to friends recently, you know, all the greats, you know, as you get older, all the greats, you know, seem to be leaving us, you know, more and more at a faster rate. It seems to be accelerated the last, you know,
right,
20 years or so. So
you're right, Chris.
The lesson to be learned there is give people their flowers while they're still here. And that's just one of the many reasons why I do the podcast and get connected with people like you and welcome you guys on the podcast, because you guys deserve all the respect, all the love, all the praise in the world for what you do and how you make the the world a better place through your heart and your creativity and your passion and your talent.
Yes, sir.
So a big part of why I do this is to give people a platform to showcase their work and their talent, but also to give them the love and respect and the props
they deserve.
So
we do. I appreciate that. And, you know, part of why we do our show is called Purple Musicology, right? Yep. And the reason that we do that is number one, it just feels so good to play Prince's music and have people receive it the way they do when you can play it at a high level. Purple Musicology, the concept of that is that we are basically students. As a musician, I'm a student. As a singer, I'm a student. Even these gentlemen that I play with, who are so, you know, highly accomplished at as musicians, you know, when you talk about Michael Bland, when you talk about Levi and Sonny T and Prince, you know, it's like people are like, oh, okay, all right, I got to step my game up this night. We're still students of those greats. And so that's why we call it Purple Musicology, because we are still studying the art form and the music that Prince created. And we are trying to recreate it live on stage. And I'll tell you, you know, one of the things that I missed and was so sad about when Prince passed is there was nothing like, you know, without a drink, without a drug, being in the audience at a Prince concert and feeling that euphoric kind of high from the music and the high level of entertainment and musicianship that that you were able to experience when you were at one of Prince's concerts. And, you know, selfishly, you know, for me, I'm somewhat trying to create that on stage with the highest level of musicians for my own selfish need, just to, if I can sing it really well and the band can play it really well and we're enjoying it with Prince's fans, there's no better feeling than that. It doesn't quite replace, you know, being at the Welcome to America tour or the Prince Time Vanity 1999 era tour or the Love Sexy tour or the New tour. Nothing will replace those moments in my life, but you know, this is something that we can do to celebrate what Prince gave to us.
Hey, you know, bottom line is, you know, Prince has moved on to a new phase of existence, and we're here.
Yes.
In my way of thinking, you know, it's up to us, the fans, to carry the torch. You know, to keep the legacy going, keep the fire burning, as it were, and talented musicians like yourself and so many others, you know, we have to do what we can to keep the flame burning, you know, keep the spirit alive, keep the legacy alive. So
yes, absolutely.
So yeah, I have tremendous respect and tremendous love for everybody who's kept the legacy alive, not only through music, but through, you know, academic work and analysis in that arena. And, you know, people have written books. I've had the great Dwayne Tudall, a friend of mine, on the podcast several times, who's written a couple of great books on Prince's studio sessions. Dwayne is one of those persons that has really done a great job to further the legacy of Prince, you know, after his passing. So
yeah,
there's so many talented people like that in all different kinds of arenas, and I have tremendous respect and tremendous love for everyone who uses their skills and their passions and their talents to, you know, keep the memory alive of this great artist,
you know,
and great human being. So,
and in my opinion too, it's like we have to keep doing this, because number one, we have to do our best to introduce Prince's music to the younger generation so that, you know, it doesn't phase out, you know, with our demographic. And one of the most wonderful experiences that I was able to have, where I saw so many young people in the audience, was back in 2019. I got that dream call and was able to go out and as a guest vocalist and perform with Prince's band with the New Power Generation. And we did London, we did Manchester, the UK, we did New Orleans, we did, where was it, in Arizona, Chandler, Arizona. And, you know, just to get that call from my musical idols and, you know, show up to sound check. And, you know, I'm like, that's Sonny T behind me. That's Leaf. Oh, just mind blowing, man. And
yeah.
So I hope that they go out and do it again, man, because I saw, you know, more young people in the audience, you know, that were able to enjoy Prince's music at a high level. And I think it's just, you know, it's crucial to keep, you know, for everybody that was involved in Prince and those, you know, who can do his music at a high level, to keep going, you know, keep doing it, and make sure that his music and the feeling of his music just lives on.
Definitely. And that's what the Purple Nights podcast has been about ever since Prince's passing. You know, there was a period there in 2016 where, in my grief, I contemplated, you know, giving it up, but I thought, you know,
more important than ever now.
Yeah. It's too important. There's so much left to be said. There's so much left to be learned about the depth of his artistry and his talent and the reverberations of inspiration and creativity that still reverberate today and will, you know.
Yes, sir.
For the rest of time, as far as I'm concerned. So
there are people still discovering Prince's greatness, you know what I mean? People coming up and guitarists, you know, who are studying, and it's like they know that Prince is one of the greatest of all time. And you know, we need to keep it that way. And the only way to do that is to make sure his music is heard and his music is played, especially live, you know?
Yes. So what are some of the things you've got coming up? You mentioned the gig in LA coming up.
Yeah, that's April 21st. And then the night before Celebration kicks off in Minneapolis on June 19th, I'll be performing at the Purple Genealogy kickoff party. So the ladies from Purple Genealogy, that's another kind of a fan group, and they have a fantastic event, real classy event. They do it at the Women's Club in Minneapolis, and so I'll be performing at that. We had a great time last year, and I didn't perform last year. I just went as a party goer, and this year I'll be performing. So it's usually just a DJ, you know, and they just party hard, and they have, you know, costumes, contests, and it's just a great way to socialize with everybody who's there for Celebration. Then, of course, I'm going to Celebration. I'm not missing that this year. So I will be at Celebration. August, I'll be with Alfonso Starr at the Love Sexy Cruise Around the Bay. And that's August 3rd. That takes off from it takes off in San Francisco, if I'm not mistaken. But so those, it's kind of purple season, man. So I'm looking forward to everything Prince related that's coming up. And I'm still working on a new album, and I've got some new music that I finished. One thing that I recently did that I'm going to release, I recently finished it, I should say. I started a while ago. But I did, I remember, you know, Prince always said, you know, if you're going to create music, you know, try to do what everyone else is not doing, right?
Right.
And so me being a vocalist, there was a time, especially in the 90s, when acapellas were, you know, very, very, they were on radio. Like, you don't hear acapellas on radio anymore. You don't really hear too many, you know, all vocal songs. Right. Boys to Men, Shy, Portrait, you know, All for One for had So in Love, and those records did really, really well. So I say that all to say that I'm also a big Alexander O'Neill fan, and yep. Jam, of course. And on Alex's album, there was a song called, or his, my favorite album of his, there was a song called Sunshine. So I have done an all a cappella remake of Sunshine. And it's, you know, it's kind of me kind of imagining, like, if I were four different singers, right? And blending my is like I was still in Color Me Bad, like I was singing with All for Boys to Men, or
sure.
So I've done an all a cappella remake of Sunshine. So I'm going to be putting that out very, very soon. And I've got a hope Jam Lewis don't mind. I got the compulsory license to do that. You know, I would love for them to be involved in it, but you know, I'm not that right. big time.
Right.
Well, but
where can people find you on social media?
Oh, well, okay. So on Instagram, it's my first name, last name, Martin_Kember on Instagram. Of course, I'm on Facebook. It's just /Martin Kember. I don't really do too much Twitter, or X as they call it now. Yeah. You know, my daughter's on Snapchat. I am on TikTok, you know. You can just look up Martin Kember, K-E-M-B-E-R on TikTok. My daughter made sure I got on TikTok. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, I'm constantly just, you know, networking with people, particularly on Facebook, because there's so many of these purple groups that are on Facebook. So, I'm just connecting and networking, with everybody there.
Thank you so much, Martin, for, taking the time, giving me your time, and,
absolutely.
Talking with me a little bit tonight, and it's very nice to formally talk to you. I know we met briefly in passing, but it's nice to finally connect and engage in conversation with you. And you're such a talented artist, sure, but more importantly than that, you're a good human being, and that radiates from you.
So likewise.
So for myself and Martin Kember, I'd like to say thank you all for watching on YouTube, listening on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And as we go out, we're going to play just a little bit of Martin Kember's cover of Alexander O'Neill's Sunshine for you. So with that, until next time, peace and be wild, everybody.
She touched me with a smile that closed, and I can't go a day without my sunshine. She warms me with a heart of gold, and I can't go a day without my sunshine, my sunshine, my sunshine.